And Terang rips one into center field. Eaton going back at the wall. She's gone. Bryce Terang, a three-run blast.
And that was a big blow in the Royals having a 4-1 lead that evaporated very quickly. A 7-run third inning there for the Brewers. Royals with a couple of errors on what was Little League baseball is what it looked like, with the Royals throwing the ball all over the place on a stolen base attempt. Royals did homer for the 13th straight game. Salvador Perez homered in the first. Royals are up 4-1. Bobby Witt Jr., 2-run double. And then they're down just like that, 9-4. 9-6 was the final. Hunter Dozier and Bobby Witt Jr. hit meaningless homers in the ninth. And Jordan Lyles gave up 7 earned runs, took the loss. He's 0-7 on the season. Royals are paying him $17 million over the course of 2 years to, well, basically stink. And so, money well spent. Or did I mean that seriously? No, I really didn't. So, Matt Cochero, his team, the tough third inning. The Royals are 12-30, and they are now heading west to start a 3-game series with the Padres, who have been underachievers so far this year. They're 19-21. That's at 8:40 tonight. A couple of quick things about the Royals. Here's a couple of good things about the Royals. Zach Greinke struck out Brewers rookies Bryce Terang and Joey Weimer in the bottom of the fifth inning in the Royals' 4-3 walk-off loss at American Family Field in Milwaukee on Saturday. But during the process, Greinke struck out his 1,000th different batter of his career. Greinke's only four pitchers, and now he's the fifth in American League National League history have ever done that. And they are all Hall of Famers. Greinke in his 20th major league season now joins that list. He's number 5. Greinke said in his typical matter-of-fact way, it's pretty neat, saying he's heard about the stat but didn't cross his mind Saturday until he got into the dugout. The guys in the dugout, were a little more excited than normal, said Greinke, who has 2,914 total career strikeouts to his credit. I was like, oh yeah, that's what happened. So that sounds like Greinke. All right, you want to take a guess on who the other four are? Pitchers in Major League Baseball history, only five in Major League Baseball history, have struck out 1,000 different guys in a career. A couple of these should be pretty easy.
I saw it the other day. Now I don't remember the names. Nolan Ryan's got to be one, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, that's a duh.
Yeah.
You know, he's struck out 5,700.
Is Smoltz one?
Nope.
No. Yeah, goodness. Clemens?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought I remembered seeing him on there.
There's another guy that struck out a ton of people. He was tall and left-handed.
Oh, my goodness. Has Verlander done it?
No, he's not left-handed.
Well, I was just thinking, I couldn't think of your tall left-hander.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. Tall left-hander, the big unit,
Randy Johnson, yeah. Right when you said tall left-hander, right before you said big unit, it hit my brain.
Yeah. And the last one was one of the best control pitchers in all of baseball. He was one of the Braves. Wasn't Smoltz.
Glavin?
Nope.
Greg Maddux.
Yeah. Yep. Nailed it. Yep, there they are. Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, Roger Clemens, and now Zach Greinke. Greinke's in that class now.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Another cool thing, I guess, makes me feel old. It was part of our Sweden Cream Facebook question of the day today. George Brett's 70th birthday is today. You remember nice. George Brett, Dusty?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. George Brett. He was my hero or kind of role model growing up in regards to athletes watching on TV. George Brett played 21 seasons in Major League Baseball, all for the Kansas City Royals. 3,154 career hits, second most by any third baseman in Major League history. Adrian Beltre broke his mark later on, 3,166. He's 18th all-time in hits in the history of baseball. And George Brett, we talk about Greinke being only one of five pitchers in Major League Baseball history to strike out 1,000 different batters, different players, different names. George Brett's one of only five players in Major League Baseball history to have 3,000 hits, 300 home runs, and hit over 300 in his career. So let's test Dusty again.
Oh,
this
man is
fun. The others are, want to take a guess?
How many were you there, you said?
He said he's one of five, but technically he would be one of six right now.
To do 3,000 hits, 300 homers, and 300 batting average.
Yep.
Did Tony Gwynn hit that many homers?
No.
I didn't think so, because he would be on my list, but no. I didn't think he hit that many homers.
Nope.
Mike Schmidt?
Nope.
Oh, man, this is going to be way tougher than the pitcher thing.
I know. It's fun.
Did Jeter do it?
Nope.
No. Goodness gracious. I don't know if I'm going to get any of these.
Oh, come on. Who's the all-time home run hitter?
Oh, well, Barry Bonds.
No. The real one.
Oh, well, he's the all-time home run hitter. No, Hank Aaron.
There you go. Hank Aaron. A lot of people don't acknowledge Bonds.
I don't care what people acknowledge. I will always say that Barry Bonds is the all-time home run hitter.
Good for you.
Because that's what the damn list says.
Good for you. Good
but for Hank you. Aaron is a good
Hank,
answer.
Hank didn't
right?
have yeah. to take anything to hit his home run.
He might not have.
So Hank is one. Another one is one of the greatest players of all time. An amazing defensive center fielder, an amazing hitter.
Oh, my goodness. Is Pete Rose on that list?
Nope.
No.
Willie Mays.
Willie Mays. Okay.
Willie Mays. Stan Musial is another.
The home runs are throwing me off because I can't remember all
and there's
these
a,
guys.
Another, there's another current player. I think he's still playing. Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, yeah.
So George Brett, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Miguel Cabrera, and Stan Musial are the only baseball players in Major League Baseball history to have over 3,000 hits, 300 home runs, and hit over 300 in their career. And George Brett won batting titles in three different decades, 76, 80, and 90. Inducted the Hall of Fame in 1999 on the first ballot. And, yeah, George Brett, 70 today. I always remember May 15th because I always know that's George Brett's birthday. I don't even have to look it up. Mm-hmm. I just know it. There you go. He's 70 his birthday today.
That's not the – I don't always remember George Brett's birthday, but
– I do because he was my exactly. favorite player growing up.
I can tell you Michael Jordan was born on February 17th, 1963, so I get where you're coming from.
There you go. And my favorite player of all time was George Brett in regards to – he was the first athlete that I loved. Then Jordan came next for me. I really like Larry Bird, too. And I like Magic, but I like Larry Bird a little bit better. So I had George Brett, Larry Bird, then Michael Jordan, and then Bo Jackson. Those are mine. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Anybody My, else?
We've kind of had this discussion before. I think Michael Jordan, since I remember his birthday like that, would probably be honestly at the top of my list. But Deion Sanders was always toward the top of my list because mm-hmm. of I was like six when Bo Jackson got hurt, right? Like I didn't get to actually see him. Right. But to see a guy that did both,
yeah,
that was Deion for me, and it was right. Bo for a lot of people like you.
You know, I kind of get annoyed sometimes when people try to tell me Deion Sanders was as good as Bo Jackson. I just go, you don't know anything. You don't know what you're talking about. Deion Sanders was not even the same class as Bo Jackson. The only reason Deion Sanders was in the conversation of Bo Jackson is because he played football and baseball like Bo Jackson, so he was able to play at both pro levels in the same season. But Deion Sanders was not, I mean, Bo Jackson and Deion were amazing football players, but Deion was not this sensational baseball player. He wasn't all-star and this and this.
No.
And 448-foot home runs in the all-star game. He wasn't throwing people out from the warning track. He wasn't breaking his bat over his knee. Now, don't get me wrong. Deion Sanders is an amazing athlete, and for him to do what he did is pretty amazing. You know, he was there on the bench for a World Series game, and then he went back, and then he played an NFL game, went to World Series game, and then came back, didn't play much in that World Series game. I don't even know if he played, actually. It was in a documentary, but, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to belittle what Deion Sanders did, but Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders are not comparable. I grew up watching both of them, and they're not comparable in regards to who was the best athlete. Bo Jackson is by far the best athlete I've ever seen in my life. It's not even close. It's not even close. You can't even come up with somebody that's second for me. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Jordan was an amazing basketball player. We saw him struggle playing baseball. Yeah, Jordan gave it a good whirl. He was maybe starting to figure it out a little bit, and then they had the lockout in 94. Michael Jordan was not Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson was a freak of nature. And you go but look at what he did in high school with all the sports and the record he set. He could have, if he set his mind to it, he could have been an Olympic track and field star. He was that good and everything. Mm-hmm. And football, he was just a man among kids. And then baseball, he was just learning the sport. So whenever I hear people say, like, if you want to say Deion and Bo Jackson, two sports stars, okay, I'm cool with that. But when I've heard a couple of people say, well, Deion was the greatest two-sport athlete. No, stop. Please stop. You obviously are born well past Bo Jackson, okay? Bo Jackson. Now, if you want to go way back, Jim Thorpe might have been the greatest athlete of all time. Now, I didn't see him. And for people who saw a little bit of Deion but didn't see Bo Jackson, they would say Deion. And we got to remember that life didn't start. Well, life did start when we were born for us, but life actually existed before we were born. And so Jim Thorpe, if you want to go way back, some of the older people out there may say, oh, okay, you could say Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, and I'll give you Jim Thorpe, you know? And he was an amazing athlete. But Bo Jackson was one of my favorite. Deion was one of your favorite just because of the times we grew up and the ages that we were. But George Brett was my favorite baseball player. Did you have a favorite baseball player?
Yeah, I mean, I saw George, you know, toward the end of his career, and I knew the lore of it. So I would say as a kid, George Brett was probably my favorite baseball player. Mm-hmm. I mean, I only saw actually what I would consider knowing what I right. was looking at for a few years. Right. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, he was definitely my favorite baseball player
for
as a kid.
For some younger people now, it might be Salvador Perez, or it might end up being Bobby Witt Jr., whatever the case yeah. may be. So the Royals get swept by the Brewers. Royals are 12-30. And Zach Greinke, 1,000 batters. Now he struck out, 1,000 different batters he struck out. And George Brett's 70th birthday. So, see, I put a little positive bow on what the Royals were. Local, well, first, before we get to local sports, Brady Paulin got second in the conference championships in the high jump. So he's all conference again. And the Shocker men surprised Houston and won the conference championship as a team. That's back-to-back titles for the Wichita State Shocker men. Last year they won it in Wichita. And this year, yesterday, they won it down in Tampa, Florida. South Florida was hosting. So congratulations, Shockers. Congratulations to Brady Paulin, even though everybody on the broadcast says Paulin and Palin.
Palin, yeah.
Palin and Paulin and Palin and Paulin, and it's Paulin. But anywho, we know who he is, and he got second. So great job by Brady. Loco Sports, Dusty.
A lot going on here today with regional baseball, softball, and golf. We'll get to that because there's some of that softball that's not happening today that was originally scheduled. But first, a quick look back at Friday. League track and field meets were held, and you can find all the results at ncksports.com. There were a lot of great performances from area athletes. Grady Seifert, 62.5-inch shot put that was very, very impressive for Beloit at the NCAA League there on Friday for the Beloit boys. A ton of outstanding performances there, and it would take me forever to go through all of them because every single league in the area had their league meet there Friday. So NPL team champs were Osborne girls and boys, both. NCAA league team champs were Beloit girls and Southeast Saline boys. Mid-Continent league team champions both were girls and Hoxie boys. And then the NCKL team champs, Chapman girls, Wamego boys. Again, all those results at ncksports.com. The first thing on the slate today for postseason, Kansas State High School Activities Association Regional Golf going on today, underway already there at the Russell Regional. It was a plan today at 8:30 at 3A. Beloit and Concordia competing there. Scheduled for today, Smith Center 2A at Hoxie Regional at 9 o'clock, and Osborne at the Oberlin Decatur Community Regional started at 9 o'clock this morning as well. So that's at 1A. So again, we hope to have updates and results that will be posted there at the Keisha website, Keisha.org. You can go to ncksports.com and find links to all the regional golf assignments and also regional baseball and softball brackets here today as well. I'm going to finish up with baseball because we're going to hear from Brandon Cox here momentarily as well. But first, I do want to tell you that regional softball today in Concordia has been postponed. So the games that were scheduled for today will move to tomorrow for first-round games, and then the rest of the tournament semis and finals will be played on Wednesday. So the Beloit girls, number one seed, will not play until Wednesday now instead of tomorrow, as they had a first round bye there at the 3A Concordia Regional. Games tomorrow: Riley County against Plainville, Stockton, Minneapolis against Russell, Victoria, and Concordia will play Marysville. Those games will start at 2 o'clock. All games at Concordia coming up tomorrow, 3A Regional. 2-1A is still on schedule as of now. At Ellis, Sylvan Lucas Wilson is 8-12. They're the number 5 seed, taking on 4 seed Bennington, who's 8-10 at 2 o'clock. I said at Ellis, but the first round games will be hosted by the number 1 seed El Saline. So Sylvan Lucas Wilson, they're on that top side of the bracket, will be at Brookville this afternoon at 2 o'clock. And Little River will play El Saline in the other game there today. So those are the baseball brackets. So again, you can find all that at ncksports.com. 3A Hoisington Regional, as Sylvan Lucas, the number 4 seed, Sylvan Lucas Lincoln at 10-10 against 5 seed Ellsworth at 9-11, a 4 o'clock start time on the top of the bracket. Those two games will be played in Heston, as Heston is the number 1 seed. And that Sylvan Lucas Lincoln Ellsworth game will be at 4 o'clock, and then Nickerson will play Heston in the game following. And then on the bottom side of the bracket will be in Hoisington. The Beloit Trojans are 8-12, the number 6 seed, against the 3rd seed Hoisington Central Plains, who's 12-7. So that's coming up here today. And then the second game following that will be 7 seed Smoky Valley against number 2 seed Ellenwood Stafford. So that's schedule here for today. As we mentioned, the Beloit Trojans getting their postseason underway here today. Again, coming in at 8-12 against the Hoisington Central Plains team that's 12-7. And Brandon Cox, the head coach of the Beloit Trojan baseball team, kind of gave his thoughts on what the Cardinals bring to the table in this afternoon's matchup.
You know, I think that they are a very good hitting team. You know, I think that they put the ball in play. Doesn't look like they strike out much. And they also bring a couple of quality pitchers as well. So, you know, they're a good team. And I think if we play our game and we put a full game together, I feel like we can compete with them.
Again, a 4 o'clock first pitch this afternoon, Beloit against Hoisington Central Plains in the first round of the 3A Hoisington Regional, and that is in Hoisington. Again, full brackets for all of that and postseason assignments at ncksports.com.
Yeah, for the Beloit baseball team, it's pretty simple. Need to pitch well. And, yeah. I mean, Beloit, their pitching has not been as good as they maybe. It's been inconsistent. And if they can pitch well, they have a chance. Pitch, like I said, a million times over, you pitch well, you play good defense, you will have a chance to win any game you play in. Simple as that. And if you don't pitch well or you don't play good defense, it doesn't matter how great you pitch unless you strike everybody out. You got to play good defense, too. So those two go hand in hand. You can usually string together a few hits and a walks here and there and get a run or two scraped across or more. But pitching and defense is huge. And if Beloit can get good pitching, play good defense today, they've got definitely got a shot of knocking off the 3 seed. But if they don't get either one of those things, it's going to be tough to get through and move on. And that's just what I've seen all year long. There's just been inconsistency in those two areas, and maybe they'll put it all together here for the first round. And there's sometimes that, or they'll have that one inning where it just blows up on them and it snowballs. They'll be going along, cruising, playing pretty well, and then one bad inning, a bad throw here, or a misplay here, or whatever the case may be, and then it just kind of snowballs. So hopefully they can clean that up going into the day's game there in Hoisington. So once again, the baseball is still on for Beloit, but the softball is postponed a day. I saw this on Twitter, and I saw the home run yesterday. The Major League Baseball has finally put an official measurement on Joey Gallo's home run from Saturday. You want to guess how far it traveled?
Ooh.
It's the longest ever hit in the StatCast era.
542.
Well, that would be insane, but 511.
I just
511.
Went for it.
511 wow. feet. You know, the key is he has a beard.
Yeah.
Because the Yankees, absolutely. He shaved it, and he couldn't do anything
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely.
That'd be two home runs in one. A Yankee stadium, it's so small. Okay. Maybe not, but I just thought it'd be fun to see if Clover's paying attention.
Yeah.
Clover, who says he doesn't watch baseball, then tells me all about baseball. You know,
exactly,
that type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. When, you know, well, the Yankees are bad for a 2-week stretch. I'm not watching baseball. Like, man, must be nice to be spoiled, you know, and be a Yankee fan for crying out loud. So there's a look at baseball. Now, college baseball, number 13 Oklahoma State used a 7-run third inning, defeated number 15 K-State in 7 innings yesterday there at Stillwater. So K-State won the first game, but Oklahoma State won the last two. Oklahoma State is 13-8 in Big 12 play. K-State now 12-9. They tied for third with Texas in the Big 12. K-State 32-20 overall. Despite the series loss, the Cats' RPI position jumped them 7 spots to number 47 from a week ago. So they're hoping to make the NCAA tournament, which if you rank 15th in one poll, I think you should be. But we shall see how all that goes. Oklahoma softball team, they've only lost once this year. They are the number one seed and the heavy favorite to win again. Yeah. They've won the last two, and they're looking for a three-peat, I believe, in women's softball. So the bracket came out for that, and they are a heavy favorite to win it all again. The NBA playoffs taking place over the weekend, and the Celtics get it done behind Jason Tatum.
One of the most dominant second halves we've seen in a playoff game in a long time. And now Boston can dribble it out. Doc Rivers and Joe Mazzulla embracing at half court as the Boston Celtics will advance once again to the Eastern Conference Finals. Banner number 18 still very much in play.
Yes, it is. I was watching this game yesterday. I caught on right before halftime. It was 55-52 Celtics at halftime. And Harden and Embiid hadn't done much. It's like, well, they got to step up in the second half. And they didn't. And it's funny. I didn't expect them to.
No.
I didn't expect them to. The Philadelphia 76ers have a major problem on their hands. And Jason Tatum was insane. He had scored 51. That's an NBA record for a Game 7. He broke the record recently set by Steph Curry in a Game 7 in Sacramento. He had 50. Tatum had 13 rebounds. He had 25 in the first half. 17 of 28 from the floor. 6 of 10 on threes. Jaylen Brown had 25 points. 9 of 19. So this is what I want to point out here with the NBA and the Boston Celtics and the Sixers. When you get to the NBA playoffs, great players have to play great. Simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stars have to shine. If you're a star, you have to play great. Now, there's times where you might play great. You don't have enough around you. I mean, There are times that happened to Jordan, obviously, against the Celtics back in, what year was that, 85, 86, 85, I think. It's happened to LeBron before. It's happened to Kobe before. You know, you can do everything you can, but if you don't have enough of a supporting cast, you can't win. But I know one thing's for sure. If your stars don't play well, you aren't winning. Not in the NBA. If your stars don't play well, I mean, and here's why. You play a seven-game series. You can play. You can have an off night. That's okay. You've got to play well in four of the seven.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sixers, you can always make excuses. Well, Ben Simmons was a problem one year. Harden was hurt last year. Embiid was 100% this year. The Sixers, without Joel Embiid, won game one in Boston.
Yes.
Joel Embiid made a comment yesterday. Now, I haven't seen the whole post game. I hear that was a comment. And if you look at the comment by itself, it makes it sound like Joel is throwing all his teammates under the bus. He says, you know, it can't just be me and James. You know, it's 5-on-5. And people certainly didn't appreciate that. And I'm sure some of his teammates didn't appreciate that. Now, Embiid did, which they didn't show, he did. It, you know, he said, hey, I didn't play well. I got to be better, so forth and so on. So he did take responsibility that he didn't play well. Joel Embiid yesterday was 5 of 18 from the floor for 15 points. James Harden was 3 for 11 for 9 points and had 5 turnovers. The two stars for the Sixers, Embiid and Harden, or at least they're supposed to be the stars. So, I mean, I'd hope so. Embiid's the MVP, for crying out loud. Those two guys in the biggest game of their careers, which that's what it was last night and yesterday. It definitely was for Embiid anyway. James Harden and Joel Embiid combined their two stars to shoot 8 of 29 from the floor. Meanwhile, the Boston Celtics' two stars, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, combined to score 76 points and shoot 26 of 47 from the floor. You wonder why Boston won? Because
hard to figure out.
I mean, all you got to do is look at Game 6. Game 6, the Sixers should have won. Jason Tatum couldn't buy a bucket. But here's a great thing about Jason Tatum. He was bad through the first three quarters shooting the ball, but he didn't give off bad body language. You know, yeah, he was frustrated at times. But you know what? He kept shooting. Shooters shoot. Great shooters keep shooting. They can miss 30 in a row. They're going to shoot. That's what makes great shooters great, is they have a short memory. Jason Tatum in the fourth quarter against the Sixers outscored the Sixers by himself after having just 3 points through the first three quarters. He had 4 threes and 16 points in the fourth quarter. And Jason Tatum and the Celtics came back and beat the Sixers in Game 6 in Philadelphia. And you just knew it was over then. And here's why you knew it was over. Because of the body language. Joel Embiid, I was watching that game. Joel Embiid's body language wasn't very good. The Sixers' body language as a whole wasn't very good. And then I'm watching Game 7 yesterday, and it's the third quarter, and the Celtics are hitting everything. And the defense wasn't good by the Sixers, and Tatum was just carving them up. And why? I don't know. The Sixers didn't seem to make any adjustments whatsoever. That's on Doc Rivers, too. So the Sixers would drive the ball into the paint, not even looking to score. Harden would drive and kick. Even Embiid did. You cannot be a star on your team and defer.
No.
You cannot be driving and kicking it all the time. That means, one, you're not a star anymore, and I don't think James Harden is a star anymore. I think James Harden is a declining player who had a good year in regards to passing the ball, led the league in assists. He had a solid year. He embraced his role, but he even knows that he ain't going to be going scoring 30 to 35 a game anymore. Is he capable of scoring 42 like he did game one of the playoffs or 45? Yeah, he has that still in the tank, but he can't do it consistently like he used to. He just can't. He's just not that player. And to me, James Harden looked slow yesterday, and he's looked slow to me for a while, and he relies on getting fouls. That's how he scores points. He gets to the line a ton. Joel Embiid's the same type of player from the standpoint that he needs to get fouled and get to the line to score points. Like, he can score in the low block. He doesn't go to low block enough. He sits outside the three-point line too much at times. He did that again yesterday. He catches the ball way too far from the block. That's, once again, on him getting position and his team giving the ball in the wrong spot, and on your coach for not demanding your guy to say, hey, get in the block, and you're 7'2", 300 pounds, dear Lord, you know, or 285, whatever it is. You're the MVP. Act like it. But James Harden and Joel Embiid yesterday, Kendrick Perkins came out and said it, and I appreciate Kendrick Perkins, and I don't agree with everything he says, but you know as well as I do, Dusty, and other people listen on the show on a regular basis, I appreciate people that are blunt. I appreciate people that are to the point. I'd rather have somebody come to me and say something bluntly to me, and it might not be something I like, It might be something, you know, maybe a little bit personal. Maybe it's something about my job, whatever. But I'd rather hear it straight. I'll at least have respect for you. If you come up to me and say, dude, that play-by-play performance the other day, Gershner sucked. I actually respect you more if you do that than going behind my back and throwing stuff on social media like a lot of people do, because that's cowardly is what that is. Stephen A. Smith can go off and rant about how horrible these guys are, and he says, I tell it to their darn face. No, you won't. You ain't going in the locker room telling it to their darn face. No, you're not. So that's, you're behind a microphone, you got safety, so forth and so on. And you could say that happens here, too. But I'm watching this game yesterday, and it was the third quarter, and the Celtics are starting to hit shots. And Tatum had been hitting all kinds of shots. And the Sixers are missing open threes, but Embiid and Harden aren't looking to score. And there was a play where Embiid never crossed half court. They were down like 17 in the third quarter. Season's on the line. Hey, listen, the Celtics have blown tons of leads this year. The NBA, you can come back from deficits very quickly with a three-point shot. Joel Embiid, the reigning MVP, and I don't care if he's a Kansas Jayhawk or not, a former Jayhawk. He played only 1 year. Because I think some Jayhawk fans just make excuses for him. Joel Embiid is a great player. But Joel Embiid, he didn't even cross half court on a play. Another play later in the quarter, he has the ball crossing half court and just throws the ball back to James Harden, who hadn't crossed half court yet. So thus it was a half court violation. Well, first of all, those are your two plus players, supposedly. Those are supposed to be your leaders. And they are lollygagging it and half you know what in it up the floor in a winner take all game seven against their rival. Joel Embiid can't get cross half court. No, he can. He chose not to on a play. I watched it. And nobody mentioned it on the broadcast. James Harden just nonchalantly comes down the floor, and I know he probably wasn't ready for – he wasn't thinking Embiid's going to throw it back to him. But you are the point guard. He didn't even – I mean, so they have two plays where I'm just like, dude, these are – you wonder why the 76ers can't win at all. You know why the 76ers can't get the Eastern Conference Finals? It's not the other players, Joel Embiid. Okay? It starts with you. It starts with James Harden. It starts with the two guys supposed to be leaders. And it also goes to your head coach, Doc Rivers, as well. And the 76ers are who we thought they were, as Dennis Green once said. The Sixers are posers. The 76ers have a good year here. They have a good year here. Have a good year here. And when it comes down to being a star and coming through, James Harden has a collective career of disappointment in game sevens, and some even been accused of he maybe threw a game seven, he was so bad.
One was a game six that I remember that looked pretty bad.
Looked like he threw it. Joel Embiid, well, he's got to be the MVP. No, Jokic, he's better than Jokic. He's a more complete player than Jokic. How? So listen, let's just cut to the chase. Nikola Jokic didn't win the MVP because writers didn't want to give him a third in a row because they didn't give other guys three in a row. Well, Jokic can't be better than LeBron and Jordan, all these guys. I can't give him three in a row. I put him in the same level, you know. But he is the best player. And then one of the knocks on Nikola Jokic was, well, his team hasn't gone as far in the playoffs as they should have. What the hell has Joel Embiid and the Sixers ever done in the playoffs? Nikola Jokic is going to the Western Conference Finals for the second time in 5 years. Joel Embiid's never gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals. Nikola Jokic gets double teamed. He makes you pay with scintillating, accurate passes, and you double him, you pay. You don't double him, you pay. He can shoot the three. He can post up and be physical. He knows how to actually post up and get on the low block. Joel Embiid sits on the 3-point line sometimes. He settles for mid range jumpers. And when Joel Embiid gets double teamed yesterday, like he did, he can't make teams pay with great passing. He had more turnovers than assists in the series. Now, tell me how that's an MVP. Listen, I'm okay with Embiid being MVP of the season. Giannis, him, and Jokic had great years. But statistically, Jokic was just as good as the last two. His team was the number one seed in his conference. The Sixers are the 3 seed. Okay? And it was voter fatigue. It was people tired of voting for the same guy. That's why, and they felt sorry for Embiid, I think, because he was runner-up the last 2 years. And he's in a major market. So they decided to give it to Embiid. Okay, it's a regular season MVP, thankfully. Because if it was a complete combined MVP, Joel Embiid wouldn't finish in the top 5. Jason Tatum would be higher in the... He finished fourth in MVP voting. Tatum outplayed Embiid. Here's the funny thing. When Embiid, when they're playing defense, all the Celtics did was pick and roll so they could get Tatum against Embiid one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Embiid's supposed to be this great defender, I hear. Now, I understand a 7-foot-1 guy on the perimeter is not as good defensively. He's a little exposed. Anthony Davis can guard some guys out on the perimeter. I've seen him do it. I saw him guard Steph Curry in a pretty key moment this year in the playoffs. And all Jason Tatum was, he toyed with Embiid, and he shoot threes in his face and drilled him. Now, Embiid, I don't think, was 100% healthy. You can make excuses. I don't think he was. He didn't seem to have the lift to defend and challenge shots and so forth and so on. But Joel Embiid, when he makes a comment, and granted, it is just a clip they took out of the whole thing he said yesterday, in fairness to Embiid. But that's something you can't be saying. You know, it's not, you know, it's 5-on-5. It can't just be me and James. Well, you and James weren't even one of the, neither one of you was the highest scorer yesterday or the second highest scorer on the team. Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey scored more than you two. So maybe they should be looking at you and saying, maybe you, the people who get paid a ton of freaking money, the stars, supposed faces of the franchise, part of the process, and one's an MVP. Maybe you guys got to be better than 5 for 18 and 3 for 11. And maybe you should hustle your butts across half court, even if we're down 15 in the third quarter. Listen, that's not leadership. I know they won a lot of games. I know they got third seed in the East. Yay. The reason the Celtics beat the Sixers is because they have better leadership. The Celtics beat the Sixers because they have better superstars. The Celtics beat the Sixers because they never had poor body language when things weren't going well. The Sixers, you can tell when they're beat. And I've seen it the last few years. And it usually starts with Joel Embiid's body language. The fact that P.J. Tucker has to get in Joel Embiid's face and get on him about something, and glad he did, but that shouldn't happen to Joel Embiid. He's not a rookie anymore. Joel Embiid, you are the face of your franchise. You talk trash a lot, and you can back it up many times. You're the MVP. You won an MVP. You got it. Now you got to play like one. And 5 for 18 in Game 7 is not doing that. And I, once again, you can, oh, well, he was 100%. We might find out he was playing with a torn ligament in his knee. That's possible. And people will backtrack a little bit. But at the same time, if you know you're hurt, I don't think you should be saying that little comment. Well, you know, it can't just be me and James. James is a declining player. I don't know if Joel's noticed this. Okay? And if he doesn't get free throw attempts, he can't score 30 or 40. And he didn't even look to shoot yesterday. So the 76ers... Listen, it starts with your stars. The Brown and Tatum are the stars of the Celtics. They just destroyed Embiid and Harden and the Sixers yesterday. And yes, those Celtic role players were better. But listen, 76-24. The Celtics outscored Tatum and Brown, outscored Embiid and Harden. They were plus 76 52. Plus 52. So you're Embiid and Harden are wanting the rest of their supporting cast to be 52 points better? That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sorry. The Sixers got what they deserved. You're up 3-2. And by the way, and Embiid says this, without you, Joel, they won game one in Boston. When you came back, you lost game two in Boston by like 30. So is he the most valuable player? Okay, he's a great player. But in the playoffs, Embiid is not been able to do it. And he's had a track record now. And they can't get the Eastern Conference Finals. Jokic has been the Western Conference Finals twice now in the last 5 years. And they might win the whole dang thing. And the knock on Jokic was, well, the reason I'm not voting for him is he isn't going deep in the playoffs. Well, that's not supposed to be the way you vote. It's a regular season MVP. So now we're finding out that Embiid is a bit of a fraud compared to Jokic. Not that Embiid's a horrible player, but he's not as good as Jokic. Please stop. You know, it's like trying to tell me Dion was as good as Bo Jackson. Stop. No. This is not it. Jokic is a better player because he can do all kinds of things, okay? He rebounds. He's an amazing passer. He can post you up. He can be physical. He can have hook shots, fadeaways. He can hit the three. Well, Embiid can do that too. He's not a passer. He's not a very good one. And when you can double team and take a guy out of a game, that means you're not a great passer. Or it means everybody misses all the shots, which I guess Embiid's implying here. And Jokic, maybe he's not quite the defender as Embiid. I get that. They're the number one seed in the West. Without Jamal Murray, the Nuggets were a 4 or 5 seed, weren't they, last year? 5 or 6?
Yeah, I think they fell to 6 or 7, actually.
In the West, which was a better conference.
They were there in the mix for most of the year.
A few years ago in the bubble, they made the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
So please stop with the narrative that Jokic doesn't do enough in the playoffs or his team doesn't go far enough. He's already twice had two teams go farther than the 76ers of Joel Embiid. Make all the excuses you want. Say it's Doc Rivers' fault. Fire him, which they probably will. Whatever. Doc Rivers is 6-10 in Game 7s, twice as many Game 7 losses as the next most. Pat Riley was 6-5 in Game 7s. But listen, to me, this is simple. Your stars got to perform. In Game 7, stars perform. Paul Pierce had 41 in a Game 7 against LeBron James in Cleveland. Outplayed LeBron in that game, and LeBron was awesome in Game 6, I think it was, that same series. Game 7 was Paul Pierce. All right? We've seen, obviously, the greats have an amazing Game 7s. We just saw Steph Curry do it. We saw Jason Tatum do it. We've seen Jordan didn't have to get to Game 7 usually. He didn't in the NBA Finals. Okay? The great players play great when the season's on the line. LeBron's done it many times. Kobe's done it many times. Joel Embiid has not. It is what it is. I hate to be too harsh, but he's a tremendous player. And I like Joel Embiid, and I wish him nothing but success. I hope he can, you know, win a championship. That'd be cool and all. But I see it, like, every year I've noticed it. And nobody seems to call it out on the broadcast much. But Kendrick Perkins said, and this is where I was going with this, Kendrick Perkins came out bluntly and said, they quit. He said, Harden and Embiid quit. And there's not a single other person I've seen that said those words. And I agree with him. Because I watched James Harden not even barely get across half court. And then Embiid threw it to him. I saw Embiid, a whole offensive possession, never came across. He just stayed back in the lane defensively. Now, if you're out of shape or you're hurt that badly, you're not helping your team. Then that's on your coach taking him out. Mm-hmm. So you didn't see Tatum and Brown lollygagging.
No.
Didn't see them hanging their head and having horrible body language when they're down in Game 6 in Philadelphia. Tatum, what would Joel Embiid have done if he had won for 13 in Game 6 in Tatum's situation in Philadelphia, if that were the roles reversed? I don't think Embiid would have done anything like Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the makeup of a player. And maybe Embiid cares. Maybe he doesn't care as much as others. Maybe his game isn't fit to be dominant in a Game 7, which makes no sense. If you're the MVP, you're dominant at some point or another. But it is got to be very, very perplexing. It's got to be very, very frustrating if you're a Philadelphia 76er fan to watch the Sixers each and every year seem to disappoint. It's all part of this process they talked about years ago when they tanked. And then you bring in James Harden. Now Harden's got an opt-out. He can be out. He could be gone. And then Doc Rivers, is going to be gone. And then they're going to have to bring in another coach. And then they're going to start over again. And so they've wasted some great years by Embiid. And at the same time, Embiid in the playoffs hasn't exactly come through.
There's a couple things there that stand out to me. Well, the obvious one that stands out to me is no matter how that's presented and however he said that, it can't just be me and James. I'm sitting here like, okay, yeah, I agree with that, and you should know that because Tyrese Maxey's bailed you out mm-hmm. plenty of times in this postseason to even get you to where you were at, yes. Right? Like, if Tyrese Maxey didn't play like he did, the 76ers wouldn't even be in Game 7 of the second round of the Eastern Conference.
Absolutely.
Like, I believe that with all my heart because he bailed him out a couple times in games that I was watching.
I think Tyrese Maxey is the second best player on the team and at times was the best player instead of Harden and Embiid.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, you should know that it can't be just you because it wasn't just you two that got you where you're at.
Right.
And so, yeah, I understand that, but also you can't say that after a game when you scored that many points and got drilled by the two stars from the other team. There's always something though with the 76ers. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago it was Ben Simmons as well, right? Yep. Like it was like I don't think we can do it with Ben Simmons at point guard or whatever with Doc.
And they threw Ben under the bus.
Threw him under the bus.
And, mm-hmm. and then and Harden like, was there's hurt
always
last year.
There's always an excuse basically mm-hmm. for why they're not where they're supposed to be in some people's eyes, right?
And
but when you come out constantly with excuses like this in post-game press conferences, you understand going in that that's probably not a team I'm going to bet on at this time of year if they don't believe in everything that they're doing, and if they're going to throw other people under the bus. And
when
not,
you do that, that's a lack of leadership.
Your teammates, exactly. And that starts at the top, like you said. And I think Doc Rivers would be the place to start with that, the poster child of starting with why do you not have accountability and leadership. And I'm not saying Doc Rivers is a bad coach. He's obviously got a great track record. He has won a championship. But it's like, you know, you can understand why some of that stuff happens with his teams when they have constant either 3-1, 3-2 leads, whatever. They can close out at home plenty of times too, mm-hmm. and they don't get the job done. And you wonder, like, why does that happen? Well, you do. You have to have leadership. You have to have guys that believe in each other too. And if you've got stars coming out and saying those kind of things in whatever context they're saying,
right,
it's tough for me as a quote-unquote role player to be like, well, I want to play for that guy. I want to win for those leaders. And James Harden's never been that guy,
no.
right? Like, he goes out there, and the only thing you can talk about with that guy is that he tries to just lead by his play and his example of the way he plays. And then he falters on that mm-hmm. when it comes down to the stretch in some of the games. And you're like, what are we learning from this guy? And, I mean, it's no coincidence that every time James Harden gets traded to some other team, we're like, well, cross them off the list to win a championship,
yeah.
right? Like, it's just, it's comical, really, to be able to just say that because you don't know that, right? But you feel that pretty strongly that, well, they just ruined their chance to win a championship because they got rid of all those role players and brought in a guy that can't win a championship. And that's a knock that's going to be on a lot of guys that don't win championships. You know, I mean, Nikola Jokic will probably get that knock if he doesn't eventually get one, right? But it's just there's certain guys that just chemistry-wise and just the way their careers have gone, it's like, I don't know if it's going to work. And he's definitely at the top of that list in my mind.
No, well, Harden, yeah, I agree with that. And, I mean, yeah. Anyway, I'm glad I'm not a big 76er fan. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Celtics move on to face the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Miami eliminated New York on Friday, 96-92. There's a great coach. Eric Spoelstra doesn't
absolutely.
Get enough credit. He's way better than Doc Rivers. He's had way less talent than Doc Rivers. I know he had LeBron and Bosch and Wade for a few of those years. Yes, I get it. But you see how like 8 of the 12 guys that are playing right now in the playoffs are undrafted. Jimmy Butler's great. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler was let go by and traded by the Timberwolves, the Bulls, and one other team.
He was in Philly at one point,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Philly, too. Yeah, he's with Embiid, yeah. And they have more Eastern Conference final appearances with Jimmy Butler in Miami than all those other teams he used to play for combined. They have all zeros. So, yeah, there's where the Sixers messed up there. And maybe Butler couldn't play with Embiid. Maybe that was part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
See, and then James Harden said after the game, they asked him about his relationship with Doc Rivers. He said, yeah, he goes, it was okay. Doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement that Harden's coming back. Although he's got 36 million reasons why he should opt in, because I don't know if there's another team that's going to give him that. I wouldn't. And then Embiid thought that, you know, Rivers did a great job, so he kind of took the company line there, whether he thought so or not. If there's anybody that's really mad right now, I can just see P.J. Tucker steaming. Like, if he took it the way that comment came out, he's got to be sitting going, you kidding me? You're kidding me? You're going to throw all of us under the bus? I mean, P.J. Tucker had 2 threes and 8 points in the first quarter, and Embiid and Harden weren't doing nothing. Mm-hmm. You're going to throw me and everybody under the bus? Like, who wants to go to Philadelphia, win a championship, and get teamed up with these guys if they don't think they're leaders? Trust me, these other players see the body language. I'm not the only one.
No, yeah.
But the announcers don't really want to point it out.
No.
So the Lakers took game 6 in L.A. over the Warriors, 122-101. Klay Thompson had a rough end to that series. Holy cow. And the Warriors say, well, we never were a championship team this year. We just never really had it. But then at the same breath, they say, you know, we can win it next year, but they want to, like, they talk about having Klay back, and Draymond as a player opt in or out. Klay wants a big contract. He don't deserve it based on how he played in that series. He had one pretty good game. He's kind of like Harden, more of a declining player, I think, which is, it happens. Age catches up to you. They're both good players now, but they're not superstars or stars anymore. They have their moments. So I think that's the end for the Warriors. The architect of their team, Bob Myers, isn't even under contract for next year. Mm-hmm. They got to get that figured out first. So there's going to be some changes to the Warriors. And if there aren't changes, they're not going to do anything next year.
No.
Because they're getting too old with those for certain players. So I don't know if Draymond will be back. He makes it sound like he wants to be back. Klay Thompson, I don't know if he is going to be back. It's going to have to be not for the money he's saying publicly. But Lakers took over. And see, there you go. And here's a difference, and I know LeBron and AD are better than Harden and Embiid combination. I get that, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron's the greatest or one of the greatest of all time. But in Game 6 in L.A., the Lakers were not going to let that opportunity slip through their hands. They jumped all over the Warriors right off the bat, 18-7. LeBron set the tone, and Anthony Davis, he had 20-some rebounds. He was a force. And And the Sixers had the same situation Celtics in Game 6, and Embiid and Harden didn't do that. Right? Yeah. But it's the other guy's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But your prediction's looking pretty good. Your NBA Finals prediction's looking great.
I was talking to my cousin yesterday. He's like, who do you think's going to win this? I was like, well, I picked Denver over Boston at the beginning of the year, so I'm just going to go ahead and stick with it.
That's what I hope
to see. Nothing's been telling me not to do that either, because I still will see, and I know the Lakers are playing really good right now, but I still, in a seven-game series, if Denver plays at their top level, there's not a team in the NBA that can beat them, I think, in a seven-game series.
The series I want to see is Nuggets-Celtics. I think it's the most entertaining series, and I think that they're Jokic should pose all kinds of problems with the Celtics, but I also think Tatum and Brown pose problems for the Nuggets. I think it'd be an awesome, great series. That's the one I want to see. These are the exact same four teams that were in the finals of their conferences in the bubble.
No, it was, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And guess how it went? Celtics Lakers, beat the Heat, or the Heat beat the Celtics, and the Lakers end up beating the Nuggets, and the Lakers and the Heat, and the Lakers beat the Heat. So I hope it's the opposite. I hope it's Nuggets-Celtics, and that would mean your prediction would be true. If the Nuggets win at all, that'd be pretty cool. Another NBA note, Ja Morant coming off a controversial season. He's been involved in a legal battle with a teenager after the two allegedly fought at a pickup game at Morant's home. He was accused of threatening a mall security guard. In March, he missed nine games after a video of him with a gun at a Colorado nightclub surfaced on Instagram. He eventually returned to the team, and the hope was that he put his issues behind him. But on Saturday, another Instagram live video surfaced. This one seemingly showed Morant in a car with a buddy of his, yet again wielding a gun. It's not clear at this time whose gun he's holding or where the car is driving and what gun laws are in place in that area, but the Grizzlies have suspended him from all team activities as it investigates the situation. We are aware of the social media post involving Ja Morant and are in the process of gathering more information. End of quote from the Grizzlies. You know, somebody pointed this out. They said, listen, if he's in a state where he's allowed to carry it, and he did that, he didn't break any laws, so people are overreacting. I'm like, you know, I mean, maybe so. I mean, you know, there's no law that says you can't wave a gun next to your head on a video. There's no law that says you can't do that. Now, if you illegally have the gun, then there's a big no-no.
Yeah.
But there is no law. He didn't fire it. He didn't try to assault anybody with this. It was simply a quick. He just raised it real quick. I saw the video. He raised it real quick, and the buddy that was filming it with his camera immediately put it down towards his knee. Like, he was like, oh, God, we just got Ja in trouble. Or, like, you know, he immediately moved the phone down. And that's, first, Ja's got to get with better people, probably. He's with the wrong people, I guess. But I think it's an interesting point. If he's in a state where he's allowed to have a gun, and there's no, as far as I know, there's no law that says you can't be jamming out the music and you know, all of a sudden you show your gun, but you don't fire it. I don't think there's a law against it. Now, it doesn't look good, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, if there's no law against it, then why is he in such big trouble from the standpoint? Somebody threw that out there. I think it's an interesting point. I'm not saying I totally agree with it, but I think it is an interesting point. You know, whereas if he breaks the law, that's a different situation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's assaulting somebody, accused of threatening a mall security guard. He allegedly fought a teenager at a pickup game at his home. Okay, those are situations of assault, okay? Those are crimes, or could be crimes, if he's convicted of them or, you know, had to deal with it. But what he did in the video yesterday or the other day over the weekend may very well not be anything illegal at all.
And I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
I don't think that's the issue here. It doesn't have anything to do with that being legal or illegal.
I know
there's still a personal conduct policy, and all of this piling up of what you've talked about already, and then the gun issue before, right? And him kind of saying, hey, I'm sure there's some kind of deal in the contract that he has with the Grizzlies that has personal conduct in it.
Right.
Doesn't matter if you're breaking the law or not. There have been a lot of NFL players that have been suspended games for not breaking any actual laws, but breaking the personal conduct policy. And I understand what you're saying.
But don't you think legal. People are a little overreacting?
Probably. So, I think the media part of that is an overreaction, but I don't know that the Grizzlies are overreacting by suspending them, because there is a
Well, they just a had a situation.
There's situations and a history of things that are going on here now.
Right.
This is not the first incident with Ja Morant.
Right.
So, I think the media coverage and all that is, I'd say about 95% of the time, they're probably overreacting when it comes to issues like this.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to talk about something, right? And so that's what they're talking about. And so, but on the other side of it, I think the Grizzlies are doing the right thing on their side of things to let this thing play out, first of all, and see if there is anything that was illegal about it.
They haven't said how long he's suspended.
Yeah, and so he's just suspended right now. And you know, I think if there's certain things that are in his contract about personal conduct, then I think he probably deserves a suspension. And if whatever he gets, if he complains about it, then, well, you sign the deal and you understand the terms of what you need to do conduct-wise, and probably not just the Grizzlies, but for the NBA as well. I don't know what if it's as serious as the NFL's personal conduct policy is, but, you know, the league could probably have something to say about it too, even though he didn't break the law.
Right. So we'll see how it all plays out. He's on a pretty big deal now, but he could be costing himself a lot of money here too, because I think they're saying that he would possibly be eligible for, pull this up here. He didn't make an all-NBA team, and part of that was because he was suspended for eight games or whatever it was. It says here, Ja Morant's bank account will be about $40 million lighter than it could have been after the Grizzly star missed out on making an all-NBA team for the season. Morant's five-year, $194 million extension could have become a supermax deal, but he didn't get on any of the top three NBA teams, top 15 players. So he missed out on that. But I heard somebody say, and I don't have it in front of me, but there we go. Let me see here. Second strike could spell the end of Ja Morant's $193 million Nike contract. Nike could pull the plug on the situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's by doing this in these videos, as we said, he's not doing anything illegal as far as we know. But at the same time, he is, you mentioned the personal code of conduct with professional sports teams. Each league or each team may be different. But he's cost himself a lot of money.
No, those kind of deals are even more fickle, right? I mean, yes. Kobe lost a lot of sponsorship for
Colorado.
Being charged with something. Mm-hmm. Like, he never even got convicted of this thing. And it found out that the girl was definitely not being truthful with most of what was going on there, right? And so he lost endorsements and sponsorship deals because of that. That's even more, you know, the Nike deal is even more fickle than the contract.
Yeah. So we'll continue to follow that. In hockey, the playoffs continuing.
Carlson, Smith, Marchessault, they score all the goals tonight, all five, as the Knights move on in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They move on to the Western Conference Final.
Golden Knights win, and they take the semifinal series in the West in six games over the Oilers. 5-2 was the final. They await the winner of tonight's game as the Seattle Kraken unleash the Kraken against the Stars in Dallas. Game 7 of the West semifinals there. 7 o'clock, the puck drops. And if the Kraken would win, you'd have the most two recent expansion franchises in hockey meeting in the Western Conference Finals. If the Kraken could win, it'd be the Knights, Golden Knights of Las Vegas versus Seattle Kraken. That would be something. And we end the show with this, a heartwarming story. Certainly sadness involved as well. Here's our good news of the day. Earlier this morning on Waterside Wake Up. But Jason Day was a really good golfer for quite some time, but he has struggled the last 5 years. Yesterday, he won the AT&T Byron Nelson Classic. It was his first win on the PGA Tour in almost 5 years. More than 1,800 days separating his previous win back in 18 at the Wells Fargo Championship. Between health issues for Jason Day, the death of his mother last spring, and other hurdles in front of him, the 35-year-old from Australia said he reached a point where he asked himself if there was still another chapter to be written in his professional golf career. That answer became clear yesterday on Mother's Day, as Jason Day carded the low round of the day at the AT&T Byron Nelson Classic for an emotional Mother's Day victory. His wife Ellie and children are watching at the very event where he captured his first tour win way back in 2010. Why was it so sweet? It was Mother's Day, of course, yesterday. Hopefully you took care of all your moms. But his mom passed away at the age of 65 last spring after a five-year battle with cancer. So he lost his mom a year ago, and a year later, on Mother's Day of all days, he wins his first tournament in 5 years. Jason Day has won a major championship. He's a 12-time PGA Tour winner. He won again yesterday for the first time in 5 years, and of all days, he did it on Mother's Day. So he's been through a lot of health issues himself, and then his mom passing away due to cancer last spring, and he finds his first victory in 5 years on Mother's Day. I thought that was kind of cool. Wanted to share that with you. Thanks for listening to Ticket here on the new Katy Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.